this week's podcast, we speak with the CISO for cybersecurity provider Tanium, Chris Hodson. Hello, I'm Anna Delaney, editor at TICE, and I met fellow Brit Chris Hodson in Nashville at the end of last year at Tanium's annual conference. Previously CISO at Zscaler, Chris is one of the movers and shakers of the industry. As well as his role at Tanium, he's a prolific writer and vlogger about all things security, as well as being named one of the top 10 cyber risk experts to follow by Vulcan Cyber. In between conference sessions, I sat with Chris to discuss his cybersecurity predictions for 2020, how he prevents self-burnout, and how he goes about implementing a culture of security in the organizations he works with.
Chris, I saw on your LinkedIn, you've said that you're keen to educate businesses about the importance of spreading an organization-wide culture of security. Mm-hmm. That's not just limited to the IT team. So tell me more about this culture of security.
Okay, I think the culture of security has to be about openness and transparency. And by that, I mean, I think the security function's potentially been feared over the last 10 years. You know, someone will click on a file and not know what they've done and possibly try to cover that up because they don't want to be sort of chastised by someone in the security function. So I suppose that's primarily what I mean, getting businesses to understand not only the what, but the why of some of the stuff that we do. I think we have, as security folk generally, we have this kind of obsession with talking in the very esoteric. We talk about cross-site scripting attacks, we talk about denial of service, and businesses don't necessarily, or certainly the end user in an organization, doesn't always understand what that means. So if we're going to expect people to be aware, as most awareness programs are aimed at doing, getting them to understand the what and the why of cybersecurity. So speaking regularly with businesses as well, different business units. We as a security function, and I know the kind of one of the keynotes this morning talked about silos. I think historically we've sat in one of those and insisted, in some cases dogmatically, that we would apply certain security controls. So going and sitting with different business units, understanding how they operate, their challenges, their constraints, and trying to apply some form of kind of contextual security based on what's reasonable and kind of in line with their risk tolerance. We're not there to define the risk tolerance of a business unit or a company. We're there to design controls that are kind of commensurate with the environment, the ecosystem, the systems. So in a very kind of short fashion, that's sort of what I mean by, you know.
But how do you practically get away from that esoteric approach and confront the whys and get people to care? Mm-hmm. And why should they care?
Because you stop talking about polymorphic malware identification and you start talking about the business systems and the services that different units are operating. So the way that I like to do it is kind of like a three-phased approach. So if you go into a unit or an organization, depending on your role, and you talk to them about kind of business strategy. So really taking that from, I don't know, financial reports or interviews and conversations that you're having, understanding what's important and what resonates with that stakeholder. So it might be, I don't know, lowering operational costs by 20%. It might be performing more expeditious mergers and acquisitions. It might be potentially improving brand awareness. Whatever it is that you're potentially doing with that organization, start then to define some form of risk factors. So things that could materially impact that organization kind of achieving those objectives and getting that traceability between the thing we want to do and potential risks to the thing that we want to do. And from there, we can start to talk about the specifics. We can start to talk about potential threat events. We can start to talk about people who may be interested in, I don't know, acquiring data which would affect you being able to do whatever that business objective was that you have. And that kind of what I call kind of control traceability, that's what's critically important there. If you can say why you have a particular anti-malware solution because it's traced back to a risk, it's mitigating a particular risk or a particular event, aligned back to a particular business requirement or business outcome. If you can't do that, and I have this conversation with CISOs all the time around complexity reduction. Say to me, Chris, you know, why have we got this solution in our environment? I said, well, I just don't know. Like, how and why someone at some point decided it was going to mitigate or remove a particular kind of event that could happen in your environment aligned to business risk. So talking, it sounds rather trite, but it's true. Talking business language, save the conversation around, you know, specifics of malware events or TTPs, tools, techniques and procedures, save them for the server room and the pub potentially, and you know, have conversations with the business in what they want to talk about, which is their bottom line and their objectives. So
on that word education as well, people have different approaches to educate businesses, but what's your approach on that?
Again, I don't want to say openness again, but it's true. Like, assume that your baseline level of knowledge of cybersecurity is very different to the person that you're speaking to, in the same way that your level of knowledge for their discipline is minimal, I would say. So start from a position of understanding what somebody does on a daily basis. Going in and not talking about technology initially at all, talking about, you know, business challenges, talking about their organisational structure, talking about how many resources they have, their approach. You know, they may be using project management methodologies which are waterfall in nature. They may be looking at the complete opposite of that, of having very fail-fast, agile ways of doing things, and start to try and apply some security that's contextual to those ways of working. Don't go in with your own prescribed set of artifacts and threat models and stuff that you've almost pontificated over in an environment. Much more understand how they operate, transparency. And also try and understand that they have a job to do as well. I think the friction that's been built up over the last 15, 20 years with the security profession and this kind of nebulous the business is because we have this, as I said earlier, this very kind of almost incredulous view of what the right thing is, when more often than not, the business unit is just trying to do what they need to do. So going in, seeing things from their side, and also trying to explain your objective. What's helped me an awful lot in end user organizations is having a sort of defined terms of reference for the security function in two forms, a PowerPoint deck of three or four slides, why we do what we do and why that's relevant to your business. And then a much more detailed, some would say verbose, actual set of deliverables of how you go about doing that. So, and some would call that a strategy and a strategic plan, but giving something the strategy, especially that's written in common business terms that someone can pick up and consume irrespective of their kind of background or knowledge on cyber.
You mentioned complexity earlier. You know, that expanding attack surface is complex, and you know, maybe too great to, for one person to handle.
Yep.
What's your advice for dealing with that? Some people are alone in this role, so you know, how do you prevent burnout as well?
Easy for me to say, prioritisation, but identifying, I think, I don't want to say removing the unknown unknowns, but it's true, right? You can't fix everything, you've just said that there. But having a broad understanding of what's important to your business and starting there is kind of key. So it's the same stuff we should have been doing for the last 20 years. Identify critical systems. Identify the vulnerabilities on those critical systems. Identify the data on those critical systems. Identify the users who are accessing those critical systems. And that might not be a particularly sexy appraisal, but that's where I would start with a very limited, you know, finite set of resources. When you talked about kind of breadth of attack surface as well, try and have some kind of contextual appreciation of your industry more broadly and understanding the types of people who may want to access the information in your particular industry, or if you're in a politically sensitive industry, people who may wish to obtain some form of notoriety or maybe some political motivation for doing something, and have a holistic understanding of that. You may not be able to apply every control everywhere, but understanding how and where and who is looking to compromise your environment is probably a pretty good place to start. And I would also say be pragmatic in the sense of you can't protect everything everywhere with the same set of controls for either various technical, people, process reasons. So, you know, if you only have a limited set of resources, go to those stakeholders that we talked about earlier and say, you know, where do you want me to start? These are the vulnerabilities that I believe we have in our environment. And also put on them kind of the, I suppose, this maturity curve. If you talk to somebody and you don't mention cost and you don't mention time, and you ask them what level of maturity they want to get to in cybersecurity, invariably I hear 5 or gold-plated or whatever the best is, but quite often 3 is probably good enough in certain areas based on, like you said earlier, you know, your limited resources. And getting that decision to be made with your kind of input and consultancy and SME knowledge, getting that decision to be made by business people rather than the security function. As I mentioned earlier, we design controls. We're not there to, you know, I suppose, arbitrarily input what we think the risk decision should be.
mean, I mentioned it earlier, but this burnout situation that you're finding a lot of security professionals in at the moment.
Yeah.
How do you prevent your own burnout, your own stress levels rising?
Yeah. I appreciate, as we just act of time to mention this, you know, when we have this breadth of technology now, this heterogeneity in what we're doing, you can't be deep SME in very, you know, the myriad different things that we need to. 20 years ago, when everyone just had Windows servers and Windows desktops, you could retain a level of, you know, low-level knowledge of systems. I think you have to appreciate, as the CISO of today, yes, you can remain technical, but it's almost this inch-thick, mile-wide. You can't go into the minutiae of everything that you're doing because there are too many things for you to be doing. So you mentioned it earlier, prioritization, delegation, saying no. Personally, I'm quite bad at that, but, you know, genuinely, like, going and saying this isn't a priority. Understanding, I suppose, what's critically important for the security function aligned to business objectives. And the other things have to be approached on a consultative basis. I think otherwise, like you say, you will burn out.
I mean, how do you cope with that attitude of, well, it's good enough, and there's you, you're trying to sort the whole situation out, and it's very frustrating, but how do you cope with that?
Because if the business has decided, whomever it is, whoever the owner of that particular system or data repository has decided that good enough is good enough based on qualified risk equation and management, then that is the decision. You know, CISOs who are out there designing absolute security are probably fairly significantly kind of hampering business productivity. And ultimately, we're not there as a security function if there isn't a profitable business who are improving and adding value and retaining customers. So, if good enough is something that someone has defined to us, we can obviously identify, and we must identify, residual risk. But we're not there to say there has to be zero risk of a system, because zero risk of a system invariably is unplugging its network cable, and then no one can work. So,
What do you think the key elements of building a good information security system are?
I would say a diverse range of people. So again, we talked about burnout earlier, but having different categories or different behaviours of people working within a function, having diversity of that function in different ways of thinking, I think is very, very important. You know, not just gender, but various different backgrounds and diversities. I think having coverage of, from a controls perspective, people who understand preventative, detective and responsive controls, and they aren't just technical. So having established processes and procedures, you can have the best technology in the world, but if it's implemented in a very poor fashion, then you're not really improving security, you're just sort of spending an awful lot of money. And I think in the modern day, to build a kind of effective security function, you have to be working cross-functionally. You know, you can't just have this vertical security team. You need, in my humble opinion, for kind of end user world now, you need security resources kind of injected into different business units who can assist those non-technical people with data classification, with risk management processes, with threat modeling, for example, because these are fairly new concepts in some organisations. So I don't think that having project-based resources for a number of security projects is particularly helpful. You need someone who is embedded within that business unit. And we see a lot of that with DevOps functions. You'll see a security architect or a security analyst injected into a development environment to give, you know, iterative security feedback on their sort of agile sprints. But I think personally you should actually be adopting that more broadly for security and having these resources in, if take financial services for an example, have a business information security officer in retail banking, in mortgages, in trading, and understanding the complexities and the nuances of how they work, because I think that will reduce, well, it's been proven that it does, it reduces friction then between the security function and different business units.
The key to understanding is having good relationships. Mm-hmm. I mean, we spoke about relationships a lot at this conference. Mm-hmm. What's something you've applied recently that works for you, that gets those relationships, that builds up that trust?
Mm-hmm. Honestly, face-to-face communication, like over and above any form of methodology or practice or way of working, going and sitting with someone and having a conversation about what's important to their business unit around, or their organisation. What are their ultimate objectives? What are their plans and strategies for the next 12 or 24 months? And seeing where there are synergies and seeing where there are potential areas of difference where we have a baseline level of security, which, again, I should be very clear on this, that isn't set by me, that is set from the top at an organisational level. And I always say this to CISOs looking at designing security policies, like that ultimate top-level policy, that direction for security in an organisation, that has to be enforced and, in my opinion, written by the most senior executives in the organisation. It should be high-level enough, it should be abstract enough to define the tone, not necessarily having the specific kind of security requirements in there at a technology level, but defining kind of how and why we're doing the things that we're doing. And that certainly helps build relationships. I think if we can get that support of why we're doing what we're doing and why the security team has a mandate and has a mission to reduce risk and the relevance of that risk reduction to business operation. I think that, as I think we said at the start of the interview, is the biggest challenge. Telling an organisation they need to reduce all these very specific and esoteric security vulnerabilities, and this person here who's already got a day job and 50,000 things to do has absolutely no idea why that's a priority over something else. So that would be, and that is actually something I've been doing an awful lot of recently, rather than just telling people thou must do this, say this is why this is relevant to your role, rather than, and that's back to that point around transparency and openness, I think.
Is it Simon Sinek, start with the why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That reminded me of that. Yeah. Tell me about 2020, what are we going to see more of, whether in terms of, you know, education or threats or whatever, mm-hmm. what do you see shifting in 2020?
From a threats and vulnerability perspective, I think we'll start to see, or we'll continue to see, organisations, when they're looking at, for example, digital transformation, not necessarily considering the prerequisites for digital transformation. I talk to lots of CISOs where their biggest challenge of, hey, we're just going to move everything to public cloud, is not necessarily the controls that could be applied there, but this lack of refactoring as they do that. So having technical debt and legacy infrastructure here, kind of riddled with vulnerabilities, moving it from your data center to another data center isn't magically going to remove all the ailments that you've got. So I think more pragmatism and visibility around fixing what you've got before you embark on something new. As boring as it sounds, that's something I see a lot of. Requirements from business leaders to reduce complexity. So I don't think they really care about reducing.
Do they know how?
Well, I was going to say, they don't necessarily know that they need to reduce complexity. They know that they need to save money in a lot of cases. And we have the added benefit from complexity reduction of improving user experience, you know, removing agents from endpoints, having, I don't know, this removal of buying a solution and only having 10% of its use deployed within a particular environment. That happens at an alarming rate in organizations that I see. And then just various tools that we see around machine learning and AI for, I suppose we all hear about the number of jobs that are open in cybersecurity, the skill shortage that we have. So for kind of the high fidelity atomic cybersecurity things that we see, removing those from being manual operation to being something that's more automated and turnkey where possible, I think we'll see more of. And then obviously with that goes the, I suppose, increase of attack surface and vulnerabilities that go with compromising data that is then going to be used for automated processing. That in itself presents quite a serious opportunity for exploitation.
I mean, how would you define your role?
Varied. I have a number of hats. So this is what I would say, primarily it's applying my years of experience in end user world to give consultative, I suppose, advice to CISOs that I work with around potentially how I would do things. And that's not to sound all grandiose and my way being the way to do it, but just the pitfalls and errors that maybe I've made. And I, as a CISO of a security and operations vendor, have the access to many different CISOs and experiences to see, you know, architectures and deployments in all industry verticals. And whilst I wouldn't go and talk about one customer to another customer, you get a very good idea of industry trends. You get a very good idea of, you know, the feasibility of applying GDPR compliance controls, or the challenges of, like I said earlier, digital transformation and public cloud deployment, or, you know, how to get meaningful metrics from a security analytics platform, and understanding how and where to kind of apply some best practices there. I mean, obviously the CISO of any organization has to be concerned with the security of their own environment and ecosystem. So I'm probably at my happiest when I can talk to customers about the ways that Tanium use Tanium to reduce risk in our environment. So it doesn't just build credibility for me as a CISO, it's materially helping the people that I'm speaking with to get the best out of investments that they've already made, I think.
Thanks to Chris Hodson, CISO at Tanium. Just a reminder, we have our cybersecurity event coming up on the 12th and 13th of February in London. We have some excellent speakers, workshops, and a live TICE podcast, which I'll be hosting. We'd love you to be there. So do check out our website for more details. That's TEISS, TEISS.co.uk. That's all for now. Join us next week for more Cyber Conversations.